Blog Talk Radio.
Like a small boat on the ocean, sending big waves into motion, like how a single word can make a heart.
Your host, Merle Exit. Well, let's see, it's 7 p.m. in the evening. I hate when people say that, like, this is 7 p.m. in the morning. And I'm in New York City, and it's, well, it was sunny out today, but now it's nighttime. It's quite dark now that they keep changing the, anyway. But and I'm inside. It's a, I think it was about 60 today. Well, we should be quite happy about that right now. Anyway, well, let's see, on our show this evening. Let's see, Jeff Saperstack has been writing comedy for quite some time. Caesar says, since before the Dead Sea was even sick. In the past month, two of his scripts have won Best Romantic Comedy or Best Comedy Screenplay at the Houston Comedy Festival, the Portland, Oregon Comedy Festival, and the Georgia Shorts Film Festival. I guess they meant short film. His biggest influence have been the Marx Brothers, Mel Brooks, and Monty Python. He always tries to create stories with both heart and funny, but sometimes they just come out funny. Well, what exactly does a screenwriter do? We will talk with Jeff for the answers. As a matter of fact, Jeff is on the air right now. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Merle. How are you?
Oh, just peachy keen.
Oh, peachy keen. It's great to talk to you then. Oh.
So, yeah, finally got you on, huh?
And the name is Naparstek. It took me 3 years to learn it.
Oh, okay. the first thing I want to ask, exactly what does a screenwriter do? I mean, what does that mean?
Well, a screenplay is basically a blueprint for a movie. And what a screenwriter does is basically come up with a story, characters, and hopefully something that's entertaining, informative, sometimes educational. Movies are made out of that stuff.
So in other words, you don't have to write the dialogue. You just have to write the, as if you're writing a book.
Everything. You're writing.
Oh, you do have to write the dialogue.
Oh, sure. You write the dialogue. It's kind of a bare bones. Let's see. Best way to describe it. It differs from a book. A book is much more expository. You can describe characters. You can describe locations. In a screenplay, it's bare bones. It's just. Tell me where it is, what the action is, what goes on, and what the what words come out of the actor's mouth. And it literally is a skeleton. And when the director and everybody else gets involved, they put the muscle tissue on, and they put the skin on, and they put, and they add to it. But the basic crux of the story comes from the screenwriter, the original basis of the story.
Okay, so is it like, in other words, is it like somebody's writing a script for a play, only it's a script for a movie?
It's similar. It's similar to a play. A play is more or less for a stage, and a screenplay, you have the flexibility of multitudes of locations, and you can just cut, and you're in another location, or you're in another time of day.
Right.
On a stage, there are many more constraints. I mean, you're limited to the number of sets, and the size of the stage. But there have been amazing leaps in creativity over the last few decades, where Broadway has or stage has become extremely creative. One example that pops into my head is the Lion King. The staging on that was spectacular and imaginative and creative and just brilliant. So.
And now it's
It's just a. The what?
Now it's a screen play, I guess. A screen. Well, it's a cartoon, of course, though, right now.
Well, yeah. No, I was talking about the original Broadway production where I remember one particular scene they had a sunrise, and it was basically a giant shade, like a pleated shade, slowly raised, and it was like watching the sun on a shimmering sea, just rising. It was just brilliant. And it was simple. It was beautifully done. And the animals, Julie Taymor was phenomenal with creating animals that just were extensions of humans, basically. But I digress. But basically,
so let's talk about...
Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead. It's your show. You ask.
No, No, it's in other words, the screenplay kind of allows you to go past the stage area.
Well, you're not as confined with locations. I mean, if one scene takes place in a bank and the next scene takes place in a police station,
right.
It's just a simple cut. Okay.
Right.
On a stage, you'd have to
I guess
to be
a good example
a little more
would be like Fiddler on the Roof.
Yeah, well they try to limit the number of locations when they do it on a stage.
Oh, sure, but when they did it in terms of the movie, you were all over the place.
Right. You have a lot more freedom because you could go anywhere and, the camera sees whatever you want the audience to see.
Okay.
So,
when did you first get into writing?
That was a process. I mean, I started, writing comedy started by being a wise ass, coming up with, wise ass remarks or something like that. And then eventually, I started harnessing that talent into writing sketch comedy. And from there, I moved up to attempting to write existing TV shows, sitcoms, and it showed me that I could discipline myself to actually, create a story and take it to completion. But what I didn't realize was writing for existing TV shows is very, very difficult because they have their writing staff and the shows already have the directions that they want to go in. So the best you can hope for when writing, if any writers out there that are attempting to write for existing TV shows, the best you can hope for is that it's going to be a writing sample. And you also have the constraints of television with their sponsors, with the networks. So from there, I moved into writing or attempting to write screenplays where I could create the story and I wouldn't have to worry about being confined to TV or what the format of the show was or the characters. I could create my own. So that gives you a lot more freedom.
So when you were writing like comedy, were you writing comedy for comedians, you know, or so you could perform it?
I didn't want to perform. I didn't have that bug. I have friends that are a lot of stand-up friends that are, I mean, comedians that are stand-ups, and it's a tough existence. It really is. I mean, to make a name for yourself takes years, and it's brutal. I mean, the stories that I've heard about comics starting out where they just bombed and they went back and they just persevered and got better and better. But the thing is, getting smacked down like that by an audience is like, I would shudder at that. But I had written for a comedy group a while back. They were in New York, the First Amendment. And eventually they went improv. I hope it wasn't my fault. Let's see. I had a writing sample that I'd sent to Saturday Night Live, and it appeared on the show. You know, so I kind of knew. I guess it reaffirmed the fact that I knew how to write comedy.
Do you know like what the segment was? I mean, do you remember?
Oh, sure. There were two sketches. One of them was a parody of a commercial. You may remember it. Where there's a woman standing behind a washing machine and she's about to do her laundry, and some salesperson comes up and he's the spokesman, and he says, "I'll give you $50 for that blouse." And he, says, "Sure, okay." And he whips out a $50 bill, hands it to her, and takes the blouse, tears it in half, and puts one half in one washing machine and puts the other half in the other washing machine, and it's a comparison between two laundry detergents. Right? I don't know if you remember that commercial. Anyhow, I did a parody of that where Gilda and Belushi, you know, Gilda's doing a laundry. She's standing there in a washing machine, and Belushi is kind of the spokesperson. He says, she's putting her frilly things in there. He says, "Oh, I'll give you $50 for that underwear." $50? Sure. And he whips out a 50 out of his breast pocket, hands it to her. You figure it's going to go in the washing machine. He takes it and stuffs it in his breast pocket and splits. So that was one. The other one was a comedy sketch they had written. It was a sales pitch for a casket. And it was fully equipped with, back when they had quadraphonic stereos and a wet bar inside and a radio telephone for any last requests. It was on, you know, like it aired, you know, one of the nights. I was kind of elated.
Do you know what one casket said to the other casket?
No, what?
Is that you coughing?
Oh, no. Wow. Very good.
Okay.
Very good.
Anyway. The brain doesn't stop. I just, you know, okay.
No. And hopefully it never does. I just, like, it should. It
no.
Just keep going.
Yeah.
But.
So tell me about the screenplays that you wrote in terms of, that won, you know, your awards, so or whatever.
Well, one of them is called Oh My Leo, and it's essentially a story about a man who has the opportunity to spend 24 hours with his wife 3 days after his funeral, and he's kind of resurrected, and he does a few things. Well, let's see. The other one was, Oh My Leo. When in Rome. Yeah, that When in Rome is kind of a zany, screwball romantic comedy. And it's where a struggling farmer falls for the emperor's daughter, but the emperor obviously has other plans. and let's see, it just to give you a flavor of the show, of the script, the emperor's name is Testicles. So, the hero of the story, and it's funny, I wrote the whole script. It took me about, I don't know, 10 months to write that. And I didn't even name the character, the lead character. I just called him Hero, which coincidentally was the name of one of the main characters of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. And but I had to name this guy, and I really had. It's like naming a child. It really is. I mean, naming characters is very important. And after about a week, I came up with the name Eugenius. So he's the protagonist.
Yeah.
He's the protagonist in the story. It's been quite a ride. I mean, we're trying. You know, I'm trying to get my stuff around, and festivals is the best way to do it if you're a heretofore unknown writer, and you network at festivals, and you hope it eventually goes somewhere. Maybe some producer is paying attention and picks up on it.
So, in other words, you have it after they've. I mean, if once they're voted, what goes from there? What do you get to do with it?
Well, I mean, when you get awards, part of the process is sending out what they call query letters, which is just it's like looking for work. It really is.
Right.
You send letters to producers or agents or managers or hopefully a producer that could do something with it. You know, if you happen to just click with the right producer that and it's made independently, because the odds of attracting the majors are between slim and none. You know, they have their channels, they get their, A-list stars and their A-list writers and stuff. So, you know, it's kind of that's a very difficult task, but the independent film market is much broader and much more accessible. And there are producers that in the mid range, they don't have to be like mega $1 million blockbusters, $100 million budgets. These aren't. I mean, these are stories, and they don't have immense special effects or anything like that. And it's not a part of the superhero franchise. It's just independent films, with good,
can you,
gritty stories or funny stories.
Can you take the film and cast it and present it?
Well, I always thought it was presumptuous to write unless you're friends with a very talented actor. I always thought it was presumptuous to, write a movie with somebody in mind. And the thing is, A, they may not like it. B, they may not be available. Or C, anything else can happen. And if you write a good script, it'll attract, hopefully, in a perfect world, it'll attract talent from every direction. Let's see.
Well, what I'm looking at, or I'm thinking about, is like in New York City, every year they have this movie festival.
Tribeca is one of them.
Yeah, and they have one here in they do this in Queens every year.
Okay. For film.
And I don't know how. In other words, it basically, I mean, it's already in movie stuff. You're watching the movie.
Right. Well, it's already shot.
Sorry, say that again.
These are independent films.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Can you take one of yours and shoot it? what I get is the people that
yeah,
are
if
in
I had,
these
if I
movies
had a
are not.
Dollars, yeah.
Oh no, no, no! I mean, but people that are in these movies are not anybody you
not
would even know.
Talent. Right.
Yeah,
well,
it's
I mean,
basically
them,
to present the movie.
Well, a lot of them could be short films. I mean, you know, that are
yeah.
They're complete, like a 5-minute film or a 10-minute film, and it's a complete story. The story is told. I mean, mine would be, if I shot a couple of scenes, it would be to raise more money. I mean, it would be a teaser. You wouldn't show that as a, it's like showing some of the ingredients of a cake. I mean, you want to show the whole cake when it's done.
Right.
But there are many. I mean, some of the like these festivals that you're speaking of are basically complete films. They're just short films. They're 5-minute films. They could be 3-minute films. They could be 15-minute films, and they're complete stories.
Right, but they're also half hour.
They could be any length. They could be any length. But the thing is, I mean, to shoot it, I mean, costs a lot of money. It does. I mean, to shoot one of my films, comparatively a lot. It does not tens of millions of dollars, but more than $5,000 or more than $10,000. It's because it takes.
Okay.
I mean, to shoot an hour like an average movie could be anywhere from 50 to 70. Depending on the shooting schedule. 70 shoot days or 50 shoot days. That's 10 weeks. So, it's a lot of crew time and a lot of editing, a lot of directing, a lot of scene setups. Whether they build the sets or whether they shoot at locations, there's a lot that goes into it in every direction. A lot of these independent films or these festival films are done on a shoestring, and sometimes they're done in one location. If you can do that, I mean, one example that comes to mind that was great was 12 Angry Men. I mean, it was basically one location, except for the courtroom. They were all 12 guys in one room. And, so there are films that are done like that, too, that can be, like, cost effective that way. But generally, generally a full-length feature, takes a lot more consists of a lot more locations, a lot more. There's a lot more story being told too. So, and again, in comparison with a play, a play is again you're limited to whatever stage sets you have. You could have five setups, you could have 10 setups, but then and that's it, and it could be done. It's just I think it takes a lot more skill to write a stage play because of those constraints, but that's okay. I chose to write screenplays because I'd rather deal with movie, in the movie genre.
So, like, do you have connections?
Not
people
yet.
To...
that's what going to these festivals and hopefully, gaining these awards, can do. It gives you credibility. It gives you, and you get, as I said, you get to network with other
why
filmmakers.
You,
and hopefully, you meet producers.
Well, why don't you on Facebook? Why don't you friend Joel Brooks?
Joel Brooks.
You know Joel?
No, I don't.
Really. It's like, how did not anyone not know Joel? Actually, Joel was my
he doesn't know me
my
either.
Comedy
okay.
partner. Huh?
Oh, okay. Okay.
Joel was my comedy
either,
partner as I was, for a long time. Even when we weren't doing stand-up kind of stuff or whatever, we managed to get into the same repertory group and things like that and another group. And he's still acting, but he might be able to assist you. Just tell him you're from Pella Parkway. That's all. He lived in my building.
Okay.
Yeah, just tell him. I don't know what he could do, but I'm sure he has connections.
Well,
and
I mean, I'll try to track him down.
Yeah, just what do you call it? As I said, go on Facebook with the friends and just get to him and just friend him and just send a message. Just don't say you don't have to say that I told you. Just say I think I remember you from the projects. That's all. He may know who you are. We're all the same age.
Okay.
We're basically the same age.
All right. Yeah, he might be a year or two older, but okay.
He might be
a year or two older than me, but that's okay.
Me?
In the scheme of things, it's nothing. No. Joel may be a year or two older than me.
No, Joel is the same age as I am. The whole thing was with the age thing was that everybody was skipping all over the place. You made SPs and all that other stuff. So what happened is that, not everybody that your exact age was also the same grade. So, for instance, now...
Well, back then, it was a big deal. I mean...
Yeah. Would you remember, like, Dale Glock and Andrea Sinberg?
I remember Dale. Yeah, I remember Dale and her kid brother Michael was a photographer, and I helped him out on a couple of shoots.
Well, Dale's, what do they call it, Mutt and Jeff. Dale always hung with Andrea Sinberg. Those were like the two inseparable people.
Yeah, I didn't know Andrea.
But Andrea was a quiet one. But as it turns out, I wound up getting in touch with Andrea now to find out that she been living in Queens for God knows how long. But anyway,
no.
So
that's funny.
But that's funny. But Dale and Andrea are the same age. However, neither of them skipped, and because neither of them skipped, I was 2 years ahead of them. Because I skipped 2 years.
Oh, okay.
And then there were a lot of people that made
the
SPs, so they were 1 year ahead.
Right, they had 2 year SPs. That's right, they had 2 year SPs.
So that's why I'm saying, in terms of Joel made the SPs, but he didn't skip another year, so he would probably. I don't know if you are younger than I am. You're probably younger than I am by about a year, right?
I think so. Yeah. That sounds right.
So then, Dale was a year older than you. Do you think?
No, I think Dale and I were the same age.
Okay, so then. Then we're both the same age.
Okay.
So, and Joel is also, but Joel, like if you Google him and you definitely you could see, who he is.
Is he in New York or is he out in California?
Oh, he's out in California. They all ran out to California.
Okay. Oh,
unfortunately.
Well, it's sunny out there.
That's the, matter of fact, I think it's Lowell Gans. You know the name Lowell Gans?
Oh, that was
Lowell Gans.
Babalu. Babalu.
What? Yeah.
He was, yeah.
Lowell, he went to Queens College, and I met him because we were doing this thing at college, college kind of show between with the house plans or whatever kind of thing. So that's why I met him and the whole kit and caboodle, and they ran out and after that they ran out to California.
Well, I think Lowell Gans hooked up with Gary Marshall.
Yes.
And if I remember correctly, Gary Marshall, Gary and Penny were from Marshaloo Parkway.
Yep. All from the Bronx. Yeah.
Yeah, it must have been something in the
water. So I mean, those, I don't know. So I don't know. I mean, like, Lowell will know my name, but I don't know. I'm just telling you some people that were from, that might, you know, could assist you on these things. I mean,
right.
You know, they could, these people couldn't do anything for me. Well, because I'm not in the business, in show business anymore, so I don't bother. I don't have to deal with that crap anymore.
It's a tough life, see? That's why
I had stopped because it was this game of, you know, trying to get me to do things for free. And it's, you know, after a while I made fun of it. I said, you know, I really need to hone in on this thing. I think what I need to do is do showcases in my house and have, like, you know, plumbers come to my house and I'm saying, well, you know, do some pipe work here, and we'll see if you're good enough to hire. I said, well, wait a minute. While you're coming to do the pipe work, I'm going to get some people to come over and watch you, and this way I can get, like, tell them, you know, for $5, you can come in and watch this guy do it, and there's also a 2-drink minimum. And then after the guy leaves, I'll say, okay, let's put up another one. And I could try with a plumber. I could do it with a doctor. I mean, let me try with other people in different businesses. I did this whole routine one time about being in show business, and the problem was what I really, really, really wanted to do in life is I wanted to be a clerk typist. And I got stuck being in show business. And I did this whole thing about, you know, how I would have people come up to my office and watch me type. And they really would applaud when I, like, did, like, the letter T, and I did it, like, 70 words in a minute or just on the letter T, you know, would get applause.
Wow.
And what? Yeah, so I did.
That's impressive typing. That really is.
But then I would wind up, I think I took the song Tits and Ass and I changed it to something for a clerk typist kind of thing. I mean, you know, because I just was looking at the absurdity of what happens when you're in show business, and they think that it's more important that you're standing in front of the audience than getting paid. You think they're doing you a favor,
right? Right.
By
giving you
an audience, and so it got to, that's what happened with me. It got to a point. I said, that was it. I had enough. I need to find something else to do. You know?
Well,
I need to make some money. So
the other thing that was a turning point for me was, When I had given that writing sample to SNL, I mean, they had been, the word was out that they were looking for writers. And, you know, let's face it, I mean, coming up with, you know, like nearly an hour and a half of material every week is, you know, they have 25 writers each writing an episode of The Simpsons, you know, and that's only a half hour, you know, it's less than a half hour.
Right.
But the thing is, it's very easy for SNL was like going through writers, you know, because they were burning out and they needed a steady stream. And the thing is, when I saw that my stuff could be, you know, if it was good, it's easy to get taken advantage of, shall we say. And the thing is, even as a stand-up, Rodney Dangerfield had a story where, you know, he would spend like, you know, 2 months or 3 months coming up with a 15-minute act. And the best, sometimes, you know, you do it, you put your stuff out there, it can disappear. I mean, you know, like there could be other comics in the audience, not casting aspersions, but hey, you know, I could make that joke work for me, da, 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 and boom, and you know, your stuff is out there,
yeah,
in the public. So, and I didn't want to, that was another aspect of, you know, keeping me from wanting to perform, because I, you know, I spend 2 months writing a 10-minute act, and then you put it out there, and then, well, in 6 months, it belongs to somebody else. So, this way.
Have you ever noticed that when singers, they could sing a song that somebody else sings, whatever, and the people in the audience, they applaud, and they don't seem to care. Nobody cares.
Well,
but a comedian comes out and says, have you ever seen comedians come out and say, I'm going to do my rendition of so-and-so doing this
Rodney
act?
Rodney Dangerfield, yeah. Right.
Yeah,
right.
Or something like that. You can't get away with that.
No, of course not. That's right. And that's a perfect example, because a singer has, I mean, their voice is their instrument. So it's individual. It's different. So, you know, 20 singers can do the same song, and each one of them could have a different interpretation, and they're all good.
Yeah.
Okay. Telling a joke, it's kind of, it's hard to modify a joke to make it your own.
Right, that's,
you know,
true.
It's not like,
then
it's
also
not like
the same, the thing with the singers, it's like when singers are doing their thing, people don't even have to really listen. They sit there and they'll talk or blah, 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 and the song ends and they just automatically applaud. A comedian,
well,
you can't go through your entire act, the entire segment of your act, with just an applause at the end.
But actually with singers, I mean, it's pretty rude to be, you know, talking. I mean, you should be listening. I mean, you should be paying attention.
No, I'm just saying, they don't even have to really listen to a song.
Yeah. No,
and you could see them, the song ends, and it's like, you know, they just automatically applaud anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Which you've ended the song.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. Then I also know. Yeah, and I also look at them, I keep noticing, why is it that the thing that gets the most applause is when a singer hits a high note? Did you ever see singers get applause when they hit a low note? No.
Now that you mention it, no.
It's always when they hit high notes. And everybody, like, thinks it's a big deal because they hit a high note. And I'm going, and?
And the song's not over yet.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I always watch, like, when someone sings a Star Spangled Banner, I find it very amusing. The thing that everybody gets the applause is when the person sings the word free, because they think that's the highest note. Do you know what I'm talking about? When they go, land of the free, and they think that's the highest note.
Oh, I think some people think it's the end of the song.
No. They just think it's the highest note.
The same
note is sung when you say the word brave.
Well, that's not the last word.
Same note.
That's not the last word of the Star Spangled Banner. You know that, don't you?
But free is not.
No. I mean, it's not brave either.
No, and I don't mean that. No, I don't mean brave at the end.
Oh. Okay. You know the last two words of, you know the last two words of the Star Spangled Banner, don't you?
Is it but other than the brave?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's play ball.
Oh right. Yeah, one of the things
Sorry.
one of the things that that I can't do in my act. I do this thing with Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
Okay.
Where I sing one note ahead. So it comes out as Take Me Out to the Ball Game, Take Me Out to the Ground by. Be some peanuts and cracker jacks. I don't care if I never get back. So it's root for the home team. If Well, anyway. So what happens? Anyway, what happens is the last note is never sung. The word comes out, and the last note is never sung.
That's gotta be tough to do. That's gotta be difficult.
Oh no, I learned it a long time ago. But what happened is I said, oh, I wonder if I could do that with the Star Spangled Banner. And I thought, well, that's okay, except I don't think people would appreciate if I sang, you know, oh, say, can you see by the desert early light what's so proudly we hail at the twilight's clamming, gleaming, it, you know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, so... Anyway, to get back to this, so what is your next step?
Well, I keep writing. That's the other thing. I mean, just take handfuls of air and put them on paper, and hopefully it catches as part of a story or something funny or both. And at the same time, just try to market what I have. And like I said, it's like looking for work, trying to, you know, send out these cold query letters, you know, asking producers or you know, managers or agents if they want to take a look at some stuff. See, it's difficult in one aspect because agents and managers usually invest their time in known quantities, and they have their stable of writers and talent and stuff, and they don't want to upset that. They're, you know, why would they take their time and then, you know, like, well, wait a minute, let me take a shot on this guy, this unknown quantity, you know. And it's very difficult, and it's easy to understand why they don't want to. So it's just a matter. So I guess the best solution would be to try to find a producer who shares the vision that you have with that story, you know, somebody, a producer who likes what they read, and they go ahead and, you know, run with it. See, the thing is, it's also, I mean, a lot of people may not realize a producer is to like a script. They also, it's not just, you know, reading the story and liking it. They have to envision spending a year of their time and a lot of money investing in that story. So it's got to really hit big. And, you know, hopefully you catch somebody who, again, shares the same vision and, you know, has the same kind of sense of humor and appreciates the same kind of story. And it's, you know, it's kind of a crapshoot. But if I wrote only to sell stuff, I would have stopped after I didn't sell the first one. But, you know, I keep writing.
Right.
I mean, I've got a half a dozen scripts that are ready to go. So
in other words, you got it. So what day job? What day job, so to speak, did you wind up doing all these years?
Well, I worked in film in New York. I was a prop man.
Oh, okay.
I did props and set dressing, and that was my day gig, so to speak.
Oh, okay.
And I did special effects, you know, sometimes. I mean, I worked in the film business. So, but there is no greater joy for me. There's no greater joy than taking a handful of air and making it funny. I mean, and it's kind of, well, and you would know this. I mean, you would appreciate it. You look at the world like through a skewed set of glasses. It's like, you know, anything can be made to be funny.
Oh, sure.
For example,
I make fun of everything.
Like, there's comedy everywhere. A couple of weeks ago, there was a road crew doing some repairs, and they had a sign up: "Be prepared to stop." If you're driving a car, shouldn't you always be prepared to stop?
Yeah, right.
You know, it's like, And you know, like having grown up in New York, I mean, did you realize, do you know that it's now a 3-point moving violation to signal a lane change anywhere in the state of New Jersey?
Okay.
You got it. Good. And it's amazing how many of those high-end cars, those BMWs and Mercedes that are made today, don't come with turn signals. Did you know that? It's insane. But let's see. I'll give you like a favorite joke. This isn't my joke, but it's one of my favorites. And it's a simple twist. Takes place in a Texas bar, and this rather large Texan is sitting on a bar stool, bragging about the size of his property. He says, "Why, I can get into my car at sunup and drive all day and still not reach the end of my property." There's a little Jewish guy sitting next to him, and he chimes in. He says, "Yeah, I once had a car like that."
Okay.
But laughter is like gold to me. It's like I may sound dry in this interview, but the thing is, it's funny is fun. Hey, why do you think the word fun is in funeral?
Right.
So, let's see. You've got most of my big insights, but go ahead.
No, so and now you said you're in like North Carolina. Is that where you are?
Yeah, just north of Asheville. Yeah, I got tired of shoveling snow in New Jersey.
Now I just, because I'm writing a second book, I was just going, I finished up on my trek through North Carolina, so to speak, going from Greensboro, we went to Greensboro, Raleigh, Charlotte, and Dunham.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dunham or Durham? No, maybe Durham.
No, not Durham, no.
There's a Dunham, too? Okay.
Dunham, I think. It was...
Yeah. There's Raleigh-Durham. Durham is like a...
No. It wasn't Durham. It was...
Okay.
Wait a minute. It was a... No. It was... Oh, Pinehurst. That's where it was. Pinehurst, right.
Okay. Yeah, I'm over on the western side of the state.
Hmm?
I'm about 20 miles from Tennessee.
Oh, okay. So, as you see, because of my sense of humor, I figure why, instead of my writing the book, it's my rubber chickens who are writing the book.
I hope you pay them well.
It's about their travels. And that's what I'm doing.
good.
I have the picture, the photo I'm going to use for the front cover. I had taken a photo. It's not Photoshopped. I had taken a photo. I went into the cockpit of a major airline, the airline that I was on, and I brought in the chickens. And I asked the pilots to pose for me as if they're teaching the rubber chickens how to fly.
No.
I took a photo, yes. I said,
That's
this is
great.
Perfect for the front cover. This
That's
is how they're
great.
Getting around, traveling.
That's great. Oh, I meant to ask you, are you on Instagram?
Nah, I think I tried this or something. I said, nah, I can't do this. I have enough. It's like this thing, I got a smartphone, a smart TV. And the problem, I'm not smart enough to figure out how to use it.
Oh, my smartphone is still smarter
apparently
than me. It's by a lot. But a couple of friends were telling me that, especially with that blog that was on Facebook, like about me, they said, you should put this on Instagram. I said, Instagram, what's that? And they persuaded me to open up an Instagram account. So I have one. So should I give my Instagram information out on your show?
Whatever you want. Oh, sure. Give your website.
Okay.
Anything you want.
No, I don't have a website. No, I'm not that savvy. It's Jeff Naparstek, Naparstek, and the number 23, and that's it. You can find me on there, and there's an unmistakable picture of me. My wife took it when we were in France. There was a road closure, and they had a detour sign up, and the road for detour in French is deviation, and it had an arrow, a big yellow sign. I mean, there was a little graffiti on it, but you could still make out the sign. And I said, Janet, come here, you got to take this picture. And I posed at the, you know, right to the right of the arrow, like the deviation is pointing right at me.
Okay.
So if you go on Facebook, you'll see my picture, you know, my Facebook picture.
Oh, okay.
Comedy.
Well,
if you want to
ever come back on the show, and you know, that whatever, you know, stuff that comes up, welcome to talk.
That's,
or just if you send me something, you know, what I there's no problem. Like I could take it and put it into the an issue of the Queen's Times that I write for. I do write about Queens, but most of the time. There's no limitation. I could write whatever I want about anywhere, anytime, kind of thing.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, every once in a while, I just, you know, I call my boss and I go, are you reading any of my articles when I send them in? You know, I kind of wonder. He doesn't say anything. You know, he's happy that I'm writing, that I, you know. But I could also turn around and say, I have four articles this week I want to get in there. And they put all four articles in.
Wow, okay.
I'm a happy camper, you know.
Okay.
You know, that's the kind of newspaper I like to write for. I don't have an editor, nothing. Nothing, you know.
Wow. What freedom.
Yes. It took a while to find a newspaper that I didn't have to, you know, be concerned about, you know, as to like, oh, God, what's the editor going to do to this one or, you know, whatever.
And who are you going to fight with this week?
yeah. And, you know, but or, you know, is it going to be right, you know, are they going to change too much and whatever, but you know, now it's just but then again, it's like my writing the book, it's a self-published book, there's nobody that's going to proof it except me,
and you'll still find typos. Oh no.
Well, what I do in the book is in the beginning of the book, I say something like, listen, if you find any typos, then I know you read the book. Don't bother telling me about them.
I really don't care. Just read the damn book. Right.
You want to play a game of counting how many? Go do it. Let me know. That's what I do. That's what I did in the first book. I basically said that kind of a thing. And this one I'm just going to say, you know, about the fact that they're rubber chickens. What do you expect? If there's a typo. I have another photo, by the way, that I found that I took a picture of, which is going to be perfect for the inside of the book when they're doing the introduction. I have a picture of one of them at an old-fashioned keyboard.
Okay.
So I'm going to say, you know, here we are. Here I am pecking away.
Hunting and pecking, right. There you go.
Pecking. Pecking, you know.
So what's the pecking order on that keyboard?
Yeah, right. So, yeah. So I'm just like, you know, going through all this like pages, and now I got to
just whirling along.
And then I get it's coming along. It's just got to get all, it's getting all the editing done, and then I got to start with the photos. But I got a couple of tech people, thank God, that are going to help me.
Okay.
And I'll probably have
very
somebody
true.
Else help
they're
me
probably,
with the cover.
They're probably 30 years old. Or 25 years
what,
old.
What, the tech?
Or
no,
less.
No.
Those are the best
but,
ones.
But anyway, so, again, so, you know, just let me know if there's anything I could do.
Okay.
To, that would
okay,
be
okay, I'll try to look up Joel and see if I could track him down.
Yeah, see, if I don't know what that he would do, but don't say, you know me.
I
don't know,
he
just...
to the show. No, don't tell
no,
Joel.
No, he won't listen to the show. He won't listen to the show. He just doesn't care about me. That's you know.
Oh, I'm
time
sorry.
Goes by and he gets big shot status and that's that kind of a thing. So, which is that's okay.
Okay.
That he does his thing and that's fine with me. That's
okay.
But listen, as I said, if it helps you, that's good. That's all.
Thank you. No, thanks for having me on the show. It's great. It's like it's a blast to talk to you. That's great. It's like play a little catch up, It's like
yeah. So, all right. So I'm going to end the show now and
okay.
Look at my phone to see who was calling me while we were on.
Okay. Okay. It was great whirling with Merle. Keep listening and talk to you again soon.
Okay.
Take
great.
Care. All right.
Take care.
Thanks again, Merle.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. And happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. You too.
All right, bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, well, I'm going to end the show. And let's see, where's my end the episode? End the episode. Okay, well. Okay, so for everybody listening to the show afterwards, have a great day, afternoon, evening, or whatever.